Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Pro-Life Month, and this hour is a pro-life open forum. If you have questions about the duties we owe to human life in its earliest stages, its latest stages, or in all its many middle stages, this is the hour for you. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you are committed, solid, pro-life person, this is the hour for you. If you are not and you'd like some help figuring it out, or you want to explain something of your point of view to us, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. It's pro-life open forum. And so that means we need somebody who really knows about these things. And so our guest this hour is Dr. George Delgado, the medical director of Culture of Life Family Healthcare. He's board certified in family medicine and in hospice and palliative care. He's also completed the certification program in healthcare ethics offered by the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Dr. Delgado, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. It's great to be here.
Well, I of course think of you when I see these stories, and I read the, I think it was Monday morning in the New York Times, the governor of New York was surrounded by women, including Hillary Clinton, saying he's going to enter legislation in the next 30 days to make abortion, define it as a human right in the state of New York. What do you say to that?
Well, I think, of course, it's very unfortunate that evil is being made out to be good, and that's how these forces work with these issues. And I think you're also seeing a greater polarization in our country, where places like New York and California are pushing harder to enshrine abortion rights and to delegitimize and to marginalize anybody who disagrees with them, and to also make it much more difficult for pro-life people just to practice their trades or to practice medicine or whatever they do. While other states like Florida, Kentucky, South Carolina are proposing bills in their state legislatures that would prohibit abortion once a heartbeat is detected, so very, very early on in a pregnancy. So, of course, what's going to happen is that all of these are going to be rounded up and they're going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. And hopefully they'll rule on the side of life, and these nonsense laws that are being passed in places like California and New York will be set aside, and the so-called right to abortion, the right to kill a pre-born human being, will also be put off to the dust heap of history, and we can move forward in trying to protect all human life.
Indeed. And it seems like as they say, or as Dickens said, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times in some ways, that we do feel like finally we're getting some hope on the legal front, that instead of courts telling everybody what to do and bossing everybody around as far as abortion goes, actually returning it to the states where we can argue about it and pass sensible laws. But it also seems that in the states themselves, maybe in anticipation of that, it's getting worse and worse in places like California and New York.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. They want to get their laws in place so that when and if Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton are struck down by this new Supreme Court, that it will go to the states, and then you will have some states that allow abortion, some that don't, and then we'll have to decide it later as a nation. Hopefully the good processes and the people of goodwill making good decisions.
888-318-7884 is our number. It is a pro-life open forum this hour. Our guest is Dr. George Delgado, 888-318-7884. I guess my feeling about it is, I mean, I don't myself think, you know, people talk about it's a matter for the states and all that, and that may be a correct reading of the Constitution. I don't actually believe morally it's a matter for the states. I don't think anybody has the right to vote on the life of another person.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's just the way our country is set up.
Right.
But part of the manipulation and the push by the pro-abortion and other really anti-Christian forces has been to take power away from the states and centralize it in a federal government that's been relatively liberal, and it's had liberal judges appointed over the years. And there's been a lot of essentially legislating from the bench where liberal judges have made decisions not based on the Constitution, but based on their ideological beliefs. And so that's been very harmful.
Yeah, indeed it has. But when it does come back to the States, we need to be prepared. Or I should say, if it comes back to the States, because this is not clear. No one can see exactly what will happen. But at least there's good hope that it will come back to the States, and we need to be prepared. I'm sure that there are many places where people recognize that human life is inviolable. And, you know, I always give the example of Alabama, just because everybody I know in Alabama is pretty pro-life. But in other places, it will, you know, maybe among them, our own state of California, that is not the prevailing view.
Right. No, it's not. And I think it'll very much mirror the Electoral College results of the last presidential election, where you had more states going for the conservative candidate, but the plurality of the population going for the liberal candidate, you know, just barely marginally, because of the huge population centers on both coasts and those liberal states.
Right, right. Fair enough. 888-318-7884 is the number. Dr. George Delgado is our guest. And I know that you have important family things to attend to in the coming days and weeks, but Have you been to the big Walk for Life in Washington D.C. before, and will you go this year?
Yes, the March for Life in Washington D.C. is a great event. I was there 2 years ago when the University of Mary led the march, and that was just what a great opportunity it was to be there and to feel the energy of the pro-life movement. So I recommend that people, even if you live far away, try to get there at least once in your lifetime to see what's going on there and see how great it is, how many hundreds of thousands of people are there. It's really, really awesome to see all those people there. So this year I will be traveling there on Thursday night, the night before the march. I'll be receiving an award from Solidarity HealthShare. I'm very humbled and grateful to be receiving that award, recognizing the abortion pill reversal work that I and others have done. And then I'll be there for the morning of the march. I'll have to leave, unfortunately, before the march starts because I have to catch a flight to join my family, my sons and my their friends and cousins and my brothers for a bachelor party for my son who's engaged to be married. So that'll be back in California.
All right. We'll let you out. You have a good reason.
Yeah.
It's wonderful, a son inviting his father to the bachelor party. That's great. That's
it is. It's going to be an intergenerational celebration, not just me, but my six brothers. So we're going to really have a great time with the young guys, too.
Well, good. Have a great time. We have spoken before about the abortion pill reversal. And if you just Google abortion pill reversal, you will certainly run into Dr. Delgado's name, but you'll get all kinds of information as well. Probably not all of it reliable, given the state of the media. But you can do your research and find out all about it. Let's go to Christopher in Duluth, Minnesota now, listening on YouTube Live. Christopher, it's Pro-Life Open Forum today. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Okay, so my question, it's a little complicated. My question involves Protestants and abortion, specifically like a major denomination of Protestantism, which is Lutheran and Anglican. Last time I checked, I'm a little hazy on Lutheranism, but last time I checked, Anglicanism was pro-life. They didn't even talk about this idea of abortion and you know, when I was growing up, the idea of abortion was just so wrong. You could talk to any Christian, Protestant, or Catholic alike, and they would just have a huge disgust about it. So why is it that the Anglican Church, among other churches, have just decided that it's okay for an abortion, because you see so many of those Anglicans going back to the Catholic Church, and I don't understand the political movement there. It just seems like a bad idea.
Well, let's let Dr. Delgado answer. What is happening in the Christian churches with the life issues?
Yeah, the landscape with the life issues, to paint it with a broad brush, is that you have the Catholics and the evangelical Christians sort of in the same camp, being very strongly pro-life and therefore against abortion, against euthanasia. And then you have the so-called mainline Protestant churches. There are some exceptions. For example, the Missouri Synod tends to be more theologically orthodox and conservative. But the other Lutherans and the Episcopalians, especially, much of the Anglican Communion, with the exception of a lot of them in Africa, who are more theologically conservative and orthodox, but most of Anglicanism and the Presbyterians, Methodists, a lot of the Lutherans and other mainline Protestant churches have fallen away, and many of them support abortion rights, and they feel that abortion is acceptable. And they make up all sorts of crazy theological arguments for this. They really, in my mind, make no sense at all when you read the Ten Commandments and you see that it says, thou shalt not kill, right? So I think essentially you can see theologically what they've done with other doctrinal matters is they've capitulated to the prevailing winds of society. And so they've given, and many of those denominations have given in to so-called gay marriage, to contraception, certainly, and to other things that go against traditional Christian teachings. So I think they've tried to be too much like the world around them and have forgotten that they should be rooted in strong biblical teachings. Fortunately, the evangelicals are holding strong. The Catholics are holding strong, although even in the Catholic Church you see some winds of dissent, even coming from the hierarchy, where they are starting to try to justify supporting things that previously were really not at all supported in traditional Christian teachings. Those who remain very faithful Catholics, of course, will never change, because we know that the truth is immutable and that it never is and never will be acceptable to kill an innocent human being.
Christopher, thank you very, very much for that question. Certainly, the whole sexual revolution, including abortion, which is kind of its crowning black mark, has been devastating for within the churches and without. There's no church, no parish anywhere that hasn't been hit with the confusion that follows upon the sexual revolution. We have to take a break. Christopher, thanks again for the call. Right now, we're still giving away that free ebook for Pro-Life Month. The ebook is called Pro-Life Answers for a Brave New World. But it'll only be through this weekend, I'm told. Through this weekend, it will be available on the Catholic Answers Facebook page. So if you'd like to get that free ebook, Pro-Life Answers for a Brave New World, go to the Catholic Answers Facebook page and get it now.
Critics often accuse Christians of being intolerant for saying a person's belief is wrong, the underlying assumption being that a tolerant worldview accepts everyone's opinions as having equal value. What can we say in response? Well, first, the objection wrongly assumes that tolerance means accepting everyone's opinions as having equal value. The true meaning of tolerance is respecting a person's dignity even though you think he's wrong. We're labeled as intolerant for saying someone is wrong, but yet saying someone is wrong belongs to the essence of tolerance. Second, the charge applies a double standard. The objector says the Christian is being intolerant for saying someone's belief is wrong, but yet in doing so, the objector necessarily implies the Christian's belief is wrong, and thus is being intolerant according to his own standards. So the charge from intolerant is simply confused and inconsistent. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I'm really a revert. There are a lot of converts on Catholic radio, a lot of reverts, those who have come back to the faith. And ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tonight, midnight Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Pro-life open forum today. Dr. George Delgado, our guest, and lots of folks with pro-life questions or comments. Or I don't know, that maybe they're not all pro-life, but you're welcome to call either way. 888-31-TRUTH is the number, 888-31-TRUTH. We talked about the big walk for life. I do want to mention the San Diego one this Saturday, 8:30 in the morning, Balboa Park, 6th and Laurel. Come on out. There's going to be a whole bunch of people there. I'm going to try my best. to be there. Next up is Nono in Illinois. Did you ever get the book Nono?
Hi, Dr. Dogo. No, I still haven't got the book.
I got to ask you. It's got to be the first thing I ask you every time you call.
I know.
Until by
know.
Some miracle it finds
Maybe
its way to you.
Maybe one day.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sure. So, Dr. Delgado, at SEEK this last week, well, 2 weeks ago, I met this girl who, she came to the Catholic Answers booth and said that she didn't want to get the 20 Answers book because she was on the wrong side of abortion, her words. And I asked her why, and she said that she went to the march sometime in middle school, you know, her preteen years or early teenage years. And the graphic pictures just were so emotionally disturbing that she doesn't support abortion, but she doesn't approve or support of what pro-lifers do because of the kind of reactions, especially considering that there are children there. And, you know, that and a few other things have happened in her family. And now her mom is, you know, well, in her words, on the verge of leaving the church. And I didn't know how to respond to, because that was a really emotional, you know, and subjective question, not one of the objective things about life and stuff like that. So what would you do in that kind of situation?
Now, is it your friend who's on the verge of leaving the church or her mother?
No, it's her mom.
Her mother, okay.
Yeah, so, her mom apparently had an abortion a little before she was born. And, you know, that and a few other complications, relationship with the priest and bishop of their diocese, you know.
Well, certainly, and that just shows if she had an abortion when she was younger, that just shows how the emotional and spiritual scarring of abortion, she really needs, the mother needs healing, and maybe you can indirectly steer her towards a Rachel Vineyard's retreat and get some post-abortive counseling. Because that's what often happens is in our minds, if we do one thing but believe another, our psyches cannot handle that. It's called cognitive dissonance. And so you choose either to continue to do the bad action and to not believe what you used to believe, or to stop doing the bad action and stay with your beliefs. You can't do both. And so she abandoned her belief because it was too hard to have the two justify the two. As far as your friend goes, you know, there are lots of different opinions on so-called graphic images. And my opinion is this. I certainly believe that if you are ever praying in front of an abortion center, that these graphic images that show the images of aborted babies are not the right thing for those women to see. And I think we have to be very, very careful with that. And I'm very clear about that, that you should only have uplifting messages because these people are psychologically very frail. However, when you're having pro-life marches and demonstrations and events, it's a whole different crowd. And sure, there might be some people who've had abortions there, but they're not walking right into an abortion center. And those pictures there are meant to motivate the pro-life people who are there. So some people say, well, they don't motivate it, and certainly your friend is saying that it was kind of repugnant and it pushed her away. And that may be the case sometimes, especially with children. We have to be careful because people do bring their children, but it's really the responsibility of all the parents who are bringing their children to make sure that they discuss all these images beforehand and even during and after and put them in context. Because if you think back to the Jewish Holocaust, we certainly show pictures of concentration camps and sometimes show very graphic pictures of people who are very cachectic, of piles of bodies, even piles of skulls and bones. And in the right context, those are okay to show, because if you don't show them, then people forget what happened. And so you have to show them in some context. And so I do think they have a place, because people have to know that these are really human beings that are being killed. And we are concrete people, and we're visual people. And so when you see the image of a fetus or an embryo that has the shape of a human person, because it is a human person, and it looks like you can see that it has head and eyes and ears, that makes a much bigger impression than if you just have words on a sign. And so there really is a place for these, but we do have to be careful and sensitive to those who see them. And I think I would just explain that to your friend and say that, you know, these people didn't mean to offend you or for this to be repulsive to you, and that she really needs to get past that. And I'm glad that she still considers herself pro-life, but I think sometimes people do use this as an excuse not to be involved or to reject the pro-life movement altogether. But the pro-life movement in general is almost without exception a very, very peaceful, a very joyful, and obviously a very life-affirming movement. And the people I've met in the pro-life movement are some of the best people I have ever met. And these are people who are, for the most part, very, very strong and devout Christians who would do anything for their neighbors. So I think it's important just to see it at that. You know, these sort of fringe people who pop up every once in a while who murder abortionists or, you know, plant bombs, those are very small majority that happen, minority, very, very infrequently. And of course, the press and the media and the pro-abortion people focus on those, but those are really the rare exceptions, and most, the very, very vast majority of people in the pro-life movement are just wonderful people that you would want to have as your neighbors. Hopefully that helps.
It did. Thank you so, so much. And I do think there is hope. I'm on a pretty liberal campus, and people are starting with things technology is doing now, you know, in utero surgeries and ultrasounds. I really, really do believe that things are getting better. So thank you guys so, so, so much.
Thank you, Nono. I'm glad to hear that coming from a college campus. It certainly is the case, Dr. Delgado, when you say that some of the technology, like these 4D ultrasounds, it really does make a difference. People can't see that and go, there's no baby there.
That's right.
Nono, thank you very much for that call. Peter in Pensacola, Florida, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio is next. Peter, your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yes, Dr. Delgado, thank you very much for coming in and talking. I live in Pensacola, Florida, and the abortion clinic got closed down due to many prayers, and every day it was open. The little Catholic ladies were sitting in their chairs with their rosary beads and their missiles in their hands. And the Alabama abortion clinic locally closed down. So in Pensacola, we were getting the Pensacola, Florida, and the Alabama abortions. And they were going nonstop once the clinic was open. But it's closed down now. And all my Baptist buddies are always making fun of Catholics and saying, yeah, this and yeah, that. I said, yeah, but where are you in front of the abortion clinics? I said, when it's raining, these little Catholic ladies are sitting there in their lawn chairs. When it's snowing, and it snows every now and then, it stays on the ground about an hour, but it does. I said, where are they? In the heat, where are you? And, by the way, I'm a Baptist, you know, so they look at me, they have nothing to say. And so I just want to give a kind of a range report. And one funny thing, it's not really funny, it's ironic. I golf with several doctors and stuff. And they're not abortion doctors, but they're all for the procedure. I call it procedure. I have little air quotes. I'm using their term, you know. And I said, it's kind of funny. I said, two heartbeats go in the clinic and one heartbeat comes out. I said, so we can call it what we want. We can call it procedure. We can call it ladies' help. We can call it abortion. We can say it's a fetus, which in Latin, fetus just means unborn child. I said, but two heartbeats go in and one heartbeat goes out. And two of my doctors that I told that to do not do that anymore. They didn't
praise
before,
God.
But they're just they're
praise God for that.
Now.
Peter, what a wonderful testimony. I feel like I have to say this to you because you said you're a Baptist and all that. As a Catholic, I think a lot of Catholics have made smart aleck remarks about those Catholic ladies that pray outside of abortion clinics. But in heaven, a lot of us will be looking up to them because they'll have a much higher place than we did. I'm so grateful for that testimony. Dr. Delgado, what do you think?
I agree, you know, Peter, and I just want to say I'm just so overjoyed to be a Christian brother with you because, you know, we are all baptized in the Christian faith. And I think we have to remember that, and the divisions of making fun of one group or another only hurt us, and I think we have to be united in the Lord and united in protecting life, and that's how we've made great strides already, and I think some of the greatest ecumenical advancements have been centered on the pro-life movement because, you know, Catholics and other Christians like the Baptists and evangelicals have seen that we have to lock arms because we have a common enemy. That common enemy is the devil. And so united we stand, divided we fall. So let's continue to stand together and continue to speak your mind to physicians and others because we can have an impact in our sphere of influence. Those that we touch will listen to us. So thank you very much for being a great witness, Peter.
Peter, sometime maybe you could witness to some Catholic bishops too. They need to hear about
that's right.
About the kind of witness that these Catholic women are giving outside of pro-life clinics. Peter, really appreciate your call. Thank you. Did we lose him? All right. Well, Peter's back to golfing. But I'm shocked personally to hear that Baptists make fun of Catholics. I had never heard that. I certainly know no Catholic has ever made fun of. Well, maybe not. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. Dr. George Delgado is our guest. It's a pro-life open forum. If you're not pro-life, you're welcome to call as well. If you're pro-life, you're welcome to call with any question you might have. If you have a specific question about life and how we properly respond to the crises that life experiences at its beginnings, ends, or middles, that's welcome too. 888-31-TRUTH.
Catholic Answers Live.
Is the church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Author Mark McNeil spent years in the Oneness Pentecostal movement, praying in its lively services, zealously spreading its unconventional teachings, and rejecting mainstream Christianity as misguided. Then he left it all behind. All in the Name is the story of a man who believed he was among an elite group of believers who followed the true faith when so many others had strayed. But an inquisitive mind, careful study, and the action of the Holy Spirit finally led Mark out of Oneness Pentecostalism and into the Catholic Church. This is an inspiring conversion story you won't want to miss. It's a faith strengthener for Catholics and an intriguing challenge to those who deny the doctrine of the Trinity. Order your copy of All in the Name today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
And this is Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team talks about Catholic kid questions about the faith.
Tomorrow morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's Pro-Life Open Forum this hour. If you don't know that it's Respect Life Month, Pro-Life Month all around the United States, welcome to it. It is, in fact, and it has to do with the fact that the Roe versus Wade decision, which settled the issue, I don't know if you know that, settled the issue for all time, came down January, I think it was January 22nd that year. And of course, I'm being facetious when I say it settled the issue for all time, because of course it didn't. And it didn't primarily because there were, as the last caller said, there were these obstinate people who thought, I don't think we should be taking human lives. And that movement has grown and grown and grown. The March for Life in Washington is a big part of the growth of that movement. I hope that Catholic Radio has been as well. Certainly, evangelical Christians getting on board and putting their full weight behind the pro-life position has also helped. Among those here in San Diego who have been leaders in the pro-life movement is our guest this hour, Dr. George Delgado. He is the creator of something that's called Abortion Pill Reversal, which you can find out all about by putting those words in your search engine. Dr. Delgado, thanks for continuing with us here this hour.
You're welcome.
And again, we got a ton of calls, so I'm going to keep going to them. By the way, if you have a question about life, about the ethical treatment of life, or even if you want to challenge us on our beliefs, 888-31-TRUTH is the number. Anthony in Scranton, Pennsylvania, is up next. Anthony, your question for Dr. Delgado.
I want to thank you before I start for your great service on the radio, reaching so many people with all this information that's helpful. So I thank you.
Thank you, Anthony.
I was with a couple of those old ladies you were talking about. We were saying the rosary at an abortion clinic, and we do this every month, they more frequently than I. The last time I went there, I don't know who it was, but either a staff person or an escort or maybe the abortionist himself put a sign up in the lawn, very small, so you can't read it from the street. You'd have to walk up close to read it. And it was a list of 10 moral arguments, because they kept using the word moral arguments justifying the abortion clinic's work. And I'll give you one example. They said that it's morally better for the parents to abort the child if they know that the child will not be welcomed in the family. Another one was, it's morally better to give the couple the right as human beings to make that decision. And I'm bringing that up because you touched on this before. It depends on the audience that you're talking to when you're trying to refute something like that. For example, if it was a woman going to the clinic, she wouldn't be thinking about those things. She'd be so concerned, petrified, fearful of what the future might be. The abortion doctor, I don't know where he would be coming from. I'm suspecting people who wrote that were the escorts, because they're in full view of us, and of course, if we go anywhere near the place, they start charging us. They don't do any physical violence to us, but yeah, they let us know that we don't belong there. So I'm asking the doctor, how do you approach these different groups that have this idea that abortion in some circumstances or in all circumstances is okay?
Yeah, they want to argue for it positively. They want to give positive moral arguments for it. Dr. Delgado?
So I think the first thing, if you can get into dialogue with them, that's a good thing, but always keep it respectful and respect them as people, because we will do more by setting a good example with our behavior than by using clever words. So keep cool and keep getting back to the topic, because they'll frequently try to switch the topic, and you know, maintain your Christian dignity and treat them in a dignified fashion. That's the first thing and foremost. That's going to make the biggest impression on them. And I think when they say that it's morally acceptable to abort a baby who will be unwelcome, that really is what we call a utilitarian ethic. And the there are certain hierarchies of good things. And so it's certainly good to be welcome, and it's good for a person who's being born to be welcomed into a family. That's a great good, no doubt about it. But the greater good is that person has a life. And the evil of ending that life, that innocent life, far outweighs the avoidance of an unwelcome baby. So, anybody should be able to understand that. Just as if you had a woman who gave birth to a baby, let's say, and died immediately after childbirth, and the father was nowhere to be found, and there were only two couples who could possibly accept this baby and a newborn baby in adoption, but both of them would not welcome the baby, would you then allow that baby to be killed because it was going to be an unwelcome baby? No, you would not. And the only difference in the two scenarios is that one baby is already born, the other baby has not been born. And so you can see that the action is morally equivalent of killing an innocent person because he or she is not welcome. And that really makes no sense at all, because many of us were not planned and many of us were not welcomed, at least initially. But we're still allowed to be born and to live. And life is a great good. It's a great gift. And that innocent person has an inviolate right to continue living. As far as the other one you mentioned about the couple having the right to choose, well, they do have the right to choose whether or not to engage in activities that might lead to pregnancy, i.e. sexual intercourse. That's where the choice is, and that's where everybody has the right to choose whether or not they partake in sexual relations. But once they do, they are giving tacit approval by virtue of their own biology, anatomy, and physiology, that if pregnancy occurs, that the mother will do her best to sustain that unborn child and give it a good start and take care of herself and therefore take care of the baby. So there is no choice or a right to choose to end the life of that unborn baby, because, again, it's an innocent human being. And the so-called right to choose is actually fabricated. It was invented by the Supreme Court as a part of the so-called right to privacy, which parenthetically does not appear anywhere in the Supreme Court. And they had to describe it using legal flim-flam, saying that the right to privacy is found in emanations from a penumbra of certain amendments of the Constitution. So essentially, it was a made-up right. And so all of this is made up. No one has the right to kill an innocent human being. And that's just part of what we call the natural moral law that's inscribed in the heart of every single person, whether they're religious or not, whether they're Christians or not. So that's how I would address that, is that no one has the right to kill the life of an innocent human being.
Anthony, God bless you in the work that you do and the prayer that you offer there outside of those clinics. If you will hang on the line, I'd like to send you a little book we have here, one of the 20 Answers books. It's called 20 Answers Abortion. It may address some of the other moral kind of justifications that people give for abortion and help you equip you to respond to those. So hang on the line, Anthony, and Marie will talk to you if you'd like to get that book. 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. We are talking, well, it's a pro-life open forum. We're talking about life with Dr. George Delgado. And if you've got a question or a comment, you are welcome to call. Joe in Columbus, New Jersey, you are up next. Joe, what is your question for Dr. Delgado?
Good evening, gentlemen. How you doing?
Very good.
Great.
Dr. Delgado, watching TV and our leadership progressively lately, I'm wondering if we're seeing more and more of an infiltration of evil in our leadership. Meaning, you look at certain political figures on the left, and you see their lack of respect for their superiors, their leadership, their devaluation of human life in abortion, all right, and wanting more and more later and later term abortion, but also not wanting to protect the citizens of this country. And I'm wondering lately, and it's a feeling that just recently came over me, you know, and I'll throw the names out there, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and all their other followers that we all know of. I just caught myself looking into their eyes lately, saying they just look like they've been polluted.
So, all right, fair enough, Joe. We don't usually give out names like that, but I do want to address the question, because the fundamental question is: are we seeing evil in the leadership of our country?
Well, I think it's no doubt that a country that gives legal protection to the killing of preborn babies has been infiltrated by evil. There's no doubt about it. And this has been going on for many, many years. And you see that it has developed over time, so that now, with certain leaders in our government, that it's abortion at all costs, that they will defend abortion to their political deaths, that it's almost become a false god for them. And I think that it has, evil has infiltrated and is taking advantage of their political ambitions, so that some of them feel that they have to support abortion at all costs in order to advance politically. But also, it's changed their own thinking, and it's influenced their ideology, so that you have some political parties that they enshrine abortion rights in their party planks, and that anybody who speaks against it is almost shown the door of that political party. So there's no doubt about it. And there are others in other political parties, too, that have let evil infiltrate them and who support abortion and other evils in our society. So there's no doubt about it. This is a spiritual battle, and the evil one has infiltrated. So our part is really to pray and fast for our country, to use our votes to remove these leaders who have evil ambitions, so that they can be replaced by good and holy people who are going to pursue the protection of human life and other good things. And we ourselves in the public square need to let our voices be heard and be part of the public dialogue.
Amen. And we don't, I just throw this to you, Dr. Delgado and Joe, I really appreciate the question. I mean, it's not our place to judge whether a person is evil or not, but there's certainly such a thing as cooperating with evil. And so there's a democratic process for it. And if people decide, no, we don't want this anymore, then that kind of behavior in politicians will stop. But we just have to make it clear to politicians we don't want that.
Amen.
All right, Joe. We got to take a break. We'll leave it there, Joe. Don't forget, Pro-Life Month, all of our pro-life stuff here at Catholic Answers, books, DVDs, everything. It's $5 each. You just go to shop.catholic.com, click on the $5 pro-life category there, and you'll find all kinds of stuff on sale for $5 an item.
Catholic Answers Live. The only thing missing from today's broadcast is you. Call now with your question.
Catholic radio, I believe, is the greatest tool for evangelization that the church has today. And I know this because we hear from people all over the world that tell us all the time they came to faith in Christ, in the Catholic Church, through Catholic radio. Guy that lives right next door to you, he might not ask you about your Catholic faith, but he'll ask us. He'll call in and say, tell me about the Catholic Church.
Dr. David Anders thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
Pro-Life Open Forum this hour on Catholic Answers Live. Whether you're pro-life or not, you're welcome to call, but I can guarantee you we're going to do our very best to give you a pro-life answer to whatever the question is. 888-318-7884. Probably doesn't surprise you that we're pretty, I don't know if staunch is the right word, but people tend to use that word, staunchly pro-life. That's not a word you hear a lot, actually. Staunch is not a but pro-life is one of those things. I'm staunchly pro-life. Let's go to Walton, Philly, Pennsylvania, listening on TuneIn Radio. Dr. George Delgado is our guest, Walt, and your question for him.
Well, Doctor, you know, I keep hearing that the millennials are the pro-life generation, and it doesn't seem to pan out. And for that matter, what's going on with California? You have all those Catholics, and still you keep getting pro-abortion and pro-euthanasia people being elected to office. So,
okay, those are good questions. I want to let him answer those, but I will remind you, Walt, you're calling from Pennsylvania. You're not exactly the pro-life capital of the world. I'm not trying to make this a contest or anything, but it's a disease that has spread, if I can put it that way. Dr. Delgado, what do you make of that? The millennials are not coming through with the pro-life votes, and we do have nutty states like us here in California.
Yeah, so the millennials are a very interesting group and a very good group, good hearts, and more of them are pro-life than previous generations. That's true because I think they've seen the science and kind of grown up with the science. And they also, they kind of have a an ethos of wanting to, quote, be nice to people. So I think that leads to them, and part of their, part of it leads to them being pro-life. But then on other issues, like, for example, the acceptance of homosexual acts and the acceptance of so-called gay marriage, they tend to favor that, too, in large part, because, again, they want to be, quote, nice, and they don't see the connection between the bigger moral picture, perhaps, and those. And I think because of that, then they can be swayed by more liberal candidates. And so if they vote, sometimes they do tend to vote for more of the liberal candidates instead of the conservative candidates who might be pro-life. I think that might explain a part of that, that complex situation with the millennials, and why it doesn't translate to votes. As far as California, California has a lot of Catholics. And, you know, if you look at Catholics across the country, they don't always vote overwhelmingly for pro-life candidates. They tend to, those who are very faithful Catholics, they do tend to vote very pro-life and conservative. There's no doubt about that. But when you take Catholics as a whole, it tends to, you know, the last election, I think, was just barely over 50% who voted for more of the conservative candidates. And that's because of a lot of things. One is that in the past, Catholics identified with the Democrat Party much more than the Republican Party. And that was when the Democrats used to be pro-life. And then when the Democrats kind of switched en masse to become pro-abortion in the late 70s and 80s, kind of when the Kennedys switched over to becoming pro-abortion and pro-contraception, well, then a lot of Catholics kind of stayed with the Democrats because they had that kind of allegiance. And then you have a lot of Catholics who are not very faithful, who may themselves maybe marginally pro-life, and so they'll just go along with the more liberal candidates, even though they are pro-abortion. So I think that kind of explains what's going on in California. California, I think, in some sense, has kind of become a toxic liberal mess, and very unfortunate what's gone on here. There are still some kind of conservative pockets in San Diego County and the Central Valley, but the state as a whole is kind of being dragged down the liberal hole. And I think the liberals are kind of seizing the day and really taking advantage of it. Hopefully they'll push the envelope too far and people will start to react to that and start to reject them. These political pendula can swing quickly in the other direction. So I think that's kind of what's happened there, and
well,
probably in some other states too.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's interesting when you do the kind of litany of how we ended up here, that traditional liberalism throughout the history of the United States was never a pro-abortion stance. But it's funny but now we do. You can just use the word liberal, and it comes with a connotation of this pro-abortion even extremism here in California and in the state of New York. But that's, I think there are very many Catholics who in America grew up with a kind of a liberal political bent that was very pro-life and pro-family.
It was. And unfortunately the Liberal Party has abandoned that wholesale, and they've embraced these anti-life measures and anti-family measures when it comes right down to it.
Bill in Modesto, California, you are up next. Your question for Dr. Delgado.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Happy to, Bill.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hey, I don't think Roe versus Wade is going to ever be overturned. Even though if we vote to overturn it, it's going to be in the court system for years. And I mean, I've been voting since Reagan's second term. And then we could put all the Supreme Court justices in there if we want, or judges if we want. But how can we overturn this?
Well, I think, you know, again, primarily this is a spiritual battle. So prayer is the most important thing, because God can turn things on a dime. And we've seen that throughout history. So prayer and fasting for life are very, very important. Secondly is to convert hearts, and that's the people that you have in you contact every single day, the people in your sphere of influence, talking to them, giving good, rational arguments, supporting the pro-life position, and doing it in a charitable manner. That's very, very important. Next is voting for representatives on all levels of government who are pro-life and encouraging them to pass laws that are pro-life. And, you know, Roe v. Wade itself, it could be overturned even as early as this year, actually. It's not something that necessarily could take years and years, because all you need is a few cases. In some of these states that we mentioned earlier that are passing the heartbeat laws, where if there's a detected heartbeat, they cannot perform abortion, those are going to be challenged by the ACLU and all of their other compadres in the pro-abortion movement. And then they're going to be heard in their state or federal courts, and then it's going to quickly move up. And when it gets to the Supreme Court, God willing, that we have a pro-life majority there, or at least a majority that is constitutionalist, because Roe v. Wade, not only was it anti-life, it was also anti-constitution. Because, like I said, they pulled this right to privacy out of thin air, and the whole ruling really makes very, very little sense. So I think that we could see that happening, you know, really sooner rather than later. Maybe not this year, but in the next couple of years, because you're right, it takes a while to move up through the courts. But these states are passing these laws that very much are designed as legal challenges. They're laws that are good in and of themselves, but they're written in certain ways to propose the legal challenge. And so they will be challenged, and then it'll move up in the courts. So I think we could see it like you know, really going back to the states, like we had discussed earlier, and then the states will be deciding this, And then if we want to look at a national thing, we maybe will have to pass a pro-life law by the Congress and passed by the Senate and hopefully approved by a pro-life president. Of course, it's not going to happen in these next 2 years where we have the House is in the hands of people who favor pro-abortion. But that could happen, and then that might be challenged in the courts, and then that could be the ultimate court decision that enshrines it throughout the land. So I actually am very, very hopeful because we're seeing a lot of great pro-life activity in the state houses. We're seeing a court that's looking more and more like it's an originalist court that looks at the Constitution as an original document. And when you look at the Constitution as the original document, not something that you can bend to meet whatever whim of the day, then that Constitution will always support life because that's how it's written.
Bill, thank you for that question. I want to get another caller in here if I can. Lori in Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. You are up next, Lori. Your question for Dr. George Delgado.
Yes, hello. I was wondering if Dr. Delgado could give me a reliable site with scientific evidence of a fetal development in the womb, kind of like the stages things happen and how the baby grows, what he would recommend.
Well, there's a good textbook called MORE, M-O-O-R-E, Textbook of Embryology. That's a nice book, and you can probably find a lot of the pictures from it online. So just type in MORE, M-O-O-R-E, a textbook of embryology, and you can type that in your search engine. You'll find good things, and then just also just type in developmental stages of the human embryo, and you'll get the unbiased scientific things. You'll know if it's a biased site just by the way they couch things, but if it just gives a straight scientific evidence, you know, that the heart starts beating approximately 21 to 22 days after conception, which is about 3 weeks after conception. In terms of gestational age, it's about 5 weeks because you always add 2 weeks to get the so-called gestational age. Look for things like that that show you that and when the brain is developing, and you'll know that that's an unbiased site. But there are probably hundreds of them. There are also movies that show computer animation of the development of the embryo from the zygote stage to embryo stage to the fetus stage, and I forget what it's called now, but you can also type that into your search engine, a computerized movie of embryonic and fetal development, and that'll pop up, and that's a great thing to just watch before your eyes to see the development. All those can be really great educational tools.
Are you a teacher yourself, Lori?
No, I'm not, but I am in a discussion right now with some future pro-choice people, and so they're wanting evidence. They're wanting some scientific evidence of...
Yeah, well, you know, the other scientific evidence you can present is just that, you know, from the time the egg and the sperm unite, that's a unique genetic code, that person has never reproduced, that all of that person needs to develop is the right location or environment, and that's the womb, and the proper nutrition. But everything else is self-affecting, self-actuating, and self-developing that... embryo really needs nothing else other than that. And so therefore, that is a true human person. And there's a famous line that Father Tad Pohulchik of the National Catholic Bioethics Center made. And he said, you know, when you look at the early embryo, and you know that it can fit on the head of a pin, and it's very small, and it doesn't look like an adult human person. But you look at its developmental stage, and why would you expect it to look like anything else than what it is? And that, you know, that makes a lot of sense, that for that developmental stage, it should look like a clump of cells. And when it's a little later on, it's developed the eyes, they should look like immature eyes. And then once the baby's born, it should look like a baby with a head that's disproportionate to the body. And then when it's a child and an adult, it should look like a person whose head is proportionate to the body. So along that line, that... embryo fetus and then later post-born person should look like what it is because that's how it's appropriate for its stage of development.
Lori, thank you very, very much for that call. Dr. George Delgado, thank you so much for a great hour.
You're welcome.
Culture of Life Health Services is where you can find Dr. Delgado. He is the medical director there. Hey, tomorrow, Ralph Martin will be in here, a fascinating and well-known Catholic theologian. We're looking forward to talk with him. In the second hour, we'll do Open Forum with Jimmy Akin. See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.